Virginia colony is settled in the early 17th century, 1609, I think. I hope that's right, somewhere around 1609. Okay. Within 10 years, you have enslaved Africans who are here. This is a pattern that you see in all of the colonies that would eventually make up America. And I think one of the mistakes people make is they think the presence of slavery is incidental to America, as though America exists, and then on the side there was this thing that was kind of bad called slavery. But slavery is central to America. The fact that 600,000 people died during the Civil War should give some clue to that, but unfortunately it doesn't, because the thing we do is we pretend that it wasn't about slavery. But if you ask the question, why would, 2%, I think it was, of the American population be killed in a conflict, the answer becomes apparent very quickly. And that is that slaves were worth a lot of money and contributed a great deal to the early American economy. In Natchez, Mississippi, there were more multimillionaires per capita than in any area in the country. Why? They were trading on slaves. We can't get away from this. And this continues after slavery. It's not like, we have the Civil War and this goes away. The New Deal, which progressives often cite as, the great sort of achievement of liberal democracy, was passed on the basis of white supremacy, on cutting black people out of Social Security, initially cutting black people out of unemployment, cutting black people out of a lot of the housing policy that we passed at the time through FHA loans. Anywhere when you look at our policy and domestic policy in this country, you can find, regrettably, it very often being accomplished on the basis of racism. This is our heritage. We can't get away from it.
Some of the heaviest debate about racism in recent years has come in the context of stand your ground laws. And there are two recent cases of the teens killed in Florida, Jordan Davis shot in the car for presumably playing loud music, and of course Trayvon Martin. When we talk about this, the legacy of racism, how do you think that plays into the legal realm?
Well, the expectation is that you will get a jury of people who will go into a room and somehow they will exist outside of America, or laws will be passed outside of America, as though who you are and who your history is doesn't affect anything. I find it hard to believe that were, say, Jordan Davis, a young white man blasting rock music, that he would have died. Now, that's a sort of declarative statement. But when you start doing the math backwards, and you start thinking about, well, how does society view African-American men? How has society historically viewed, African-American boys? Because I think that's much more the point. How has society historically viewed African-American boys? Why does it view African-American boys in this way? What is that about? Then you get a lot clearer on how this happened. We are a country of alcoholics, right? But we don't want to admit it. It's like that sort of thing. You have a drug addiction, but you're trying to act like you don't actually have one. This is who we are. It runs right through our history. And the expectation that our citizens, will make decisions outside, of our heritage, of our history, is deeply bizarre.
This week you wrote about some comments Republican Congressman Paul Ryan from Wisconsin made, and he basically asserts it's a lack of family structure in the inner cities that contribute to unemployment and incarceration among people who are black. What you argue is that this isn't really a conservative argument anymore, because even the president, who is black, is saying the same thing.
This is a really, really old note. I think people think like this is new, or it was like a novel invention that comes out of the 60s. But the notion that black people, the family structures of black people, are somehow deficient. And that they're deficient either because of, culture, either deficient because of, something in their DNA, or deficient because of past treatment, is old. I was just upstairs going through Eric Fauna's massive history of Reconstruction. And, he talks about how Northern reformers who came south, expected that black people would need to be schooled, what marriage was and, how to properly behave in a family and quote unquote Christian values. The problem with that is they're very intelligent, reasons. If you really want to understand why, certain family structures take the form they do. For instance, the oft-cited statistic that 70, I don't know what the number is now, but 70% of African-American children are born out of wedlock. That's actually a more complicated phenomenon going on. I'm sorry to go totally wonky on you, but for instance, if you break apart the birth rate for married African-American women, and I'm not talking about proportion, I'm talking about the birth rate per thousand, you find that married African-American women actually have less children than married white women. And if you look at unmarried African-American women, what you see is the number of children they're having is actually on the decline per thousand. But what you have is a proportional difference. And why that is it's a totally different question. It's not that African-American women are going out and acting irresponsibly. They live in communities where 1 in 3 of the men have some sort of contact with the justice system, where the men are chronically underemployed. And it's been that way now for decades at least. If you put yourself in the seat of an African-American woman, maybe you wouldn't want to, you know, necessarily marry either. Maybe you wouldn't want to necessarily hitch your wagon to somebody who you thought had a 30% chance of, you know, being involved with the law, who you cannot depend on to necessarily have a job. Part of marriage is a business transaction. As far as I'm concerned, a lot of, you know, African-American women and a lot of the things that we sort of denigrate as culturally pathological are actually very intelligent if you understand the situation. If you put yourself in the situation, you can totally understand the decisions. They're not mysterious.
Do you think that we're trying to solve the wrong problem?
Yes.
What should this conversation
be? We should strive for the total and utter destruction of white supremacy. It's really that simple. It's not much more complicated than that at all. And you can break that into its constituent parts, where you have a situation where African-American men comprise some fractional decimal point of the number of people on the planet Earth, and yet at the same time comprise 8% of all people, all human beings in jail. That is staggering and deeply, deeply immoral. We should be shamed by that. When you have a situation where you have states across, and I hope North Carolina is not one of them. I'm remembering now, where you have states across the union where people are trying to strip African Americans of the right to vote under the color of voter ID laws. You know, and you can just basically go down the list, you know, issue after issue after issue, stop and frisk, employment discrimination. This is unacceptable. It's unacceptable for a country that, you know, premises itself on fairness and equality, unless it means fairness and equality for some people and not for other people. I actually think the problem is quite simple. It doesn't mean it's easy, but understanding what's wrong is not hard at all.
What do you hope people take away from your talk tonight at Duke?
A realistic sense of the country they live in. That's it.
Good. Fair enough. Thank you very much.
Thank you.